from me. You've been gone, gonna make it up to me. I've been waiting too long for your love. Know you like it better when it's off the cuff. I'ma put my weight on it, ride it like a wave on it. Brown liquor in a heat wave always make me feel this way. Show me what you know about it. Tell me that you can go and let it. Tell me why. You'll be back on your boat.
Hello and welcome to Schmo-D-O, the show for schmoes, Schmo Radio. My name is Ruby Raven. You're listening to CITR Radio 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live on the unceded and stolen Musqueam territory. Welcome to today. It is Friday, October 20th. Last week was Friday, October 13th. Friday the 13th. But today it's just Friday the 20th. And there's nothing in our culture about Friday the 20th. So we are continuing with our TIFF coverage. Callum and I, my producer Callum, we traveled to Toronto at the beginning of September, and we attended Toronto International Film Festival, which was incredible. We went as on behalf of CITR as members of the press, and we saw films, we interviewed people, and we interviewed some more people. So there's a lot of interviews coming out. We did a couple long form interviews, which is what we normally do on the show. But at TIFF, there's a ton of red carpets. So we have a lot of these like snippet interviews that are, some of them are like 3 minutes. One is like 2 minutes. I have a couple that are like 5 minutes. Last week, I played some interviews. An interview with Sam Levy, who was a cinematographer on a film called His Three Daughters, directed by Azazel Jacobs. And it was a red carpet interview that I had done with him. And today I'm going to play the interviews that I did with the director, Azazel Jacobs, about his film, His Three Daughters. So it's interesting, as I mentioned before, because of the, in a previous episode, I mean, because of the strikes, TIFF was really different this year. I'd be like walking around the downtown core where everything's located, and I'd like hear people walking past me be like, oh, it's a quiet one this year. Yeah, it's a real quiet one. It's really quiet. So it was my first TIFF, so I didn't know anything different. But because of the strikes, things were really different. And the red carpets we would go to, sometimes there would be like a lot less press there because there weren't these big stars, which meant that we got some more time with the directors, the composers, the writers, the producers, who we otherwise wouldn't have had as much time with. So the Azazel Jacobs interview that I'm going to play is actually the equivalent of 10 minutes, which sometimes is the length of long form interviews that we do. But what happened was there weren't a ton of press people in the line. So the big stars in his film are Natasha Lyonne, Elizabeth Olsen, and Carrie Coon. Had those actresses been at the premiere, maybe we wouldn't have had as much time to talk to Azazel and Sam. But I talked to Azazel, and then he moved along the press line, and then he was done moving along the press line, and I was like, well, he's gonna want to talk to, so I kind of called him back over. And so I had two interviews with him, and then a couple days later I was at the Scotiabank Theater, and he was walking out of the lounge, and he waved at me, he remembered me, and I was like, wow, this is truly an incredible moment. One human remembered another human. Wow. So I'm going to play those interviews with Azazel. And as I always like to preface before I play these red carpet interviews, I think this was the second red carpet that that I'd done. And the mics were being weird, and everything sort of happened so quickly. So every time I was feeling a little uncomfortable about being on a red carpet, I would just look at Callum and I'd be like, you know what? This is the show for schmoes. This is the show where we are messing up and we're being embarrassing. And we're honestly on brand. Like, we're doing what we're supposed to do if we don't know what we're doing. So that really comforted me in times of stress at TIFF when I was trying to seem like I really knew what I was doing, because I didn't. I had never been there before. But the schmo liberates us all. So you will hear some schmoey interviews or some schmoey components of the interview. So I'm going to play the first Azazel Jacobs interview, and then I'm going to play the second one after I kind of awkwardly called him back over to speak with me. All right. So here is Azazel Jacobs. He is the director of His Three Daughters. His Three Daughters premiered at, TIFF, and, it's about three daughters who return home to their to their father's apartment and care for him while he's ailing. And you never see the father. It's a story of the three sisters. It's a story of the relationship between the three sisters and how they go about dealing with something that a lot of people go through, which is losing a parent, and how they lean on each other. And yeah, so here is my interview with Azazel Jacobs.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, my name is Ruby Raven, and I am with CITR Discorder.
Okay, great.
I have a radio show called Schmodio, and we also write articles in the magazine. And on Schmodio, it's a comedy show based on liberating people from their embarrassments and talking about the comedy and life.
Oh.
And in your film, it's obviously sort of a universal sadness that people experience, and the pain of of being a sibling, losing your parent. But I'm wondering what it was like infusing moments of joy and humor into a film that for everyone watching is obviously so painful for these characters.
I have to say, for me, making a film is so joyful that wasn't the hard thing. In fact, I think the reality of the experience, where everything is so out of control and so unpredictable, was completely counterbalanced by what you have to do with a film, where you have to think of everything ahead and just try to plan meticulously, and then things go in the way that you wrote it, which never happens in reality. So for me, this was the whole experience. The whole thing was joyful and cathartic in a way that I think I want to share with an audience, but is just part of obviously the real experience.
And why was it important for you to make this film and for you to be a part of this film and this story?
Well, outliving your parents is like the best case scenario, I think. You know, that's the idea at least. And it still feels impossible. So for me, the whole thing has been a mystery of having now folks that are elderly and kind of, you know, facing a lot of this situation that this film was about. It's become my whole life these past few years. And so I had to tie it into the work that I make and my art, and also in some way give me a relief in some way that I can control it.
Did it at all change or shift or put a focus on your own mortality or your parents' mortality?
Yeah, absolutely. But it also gave me a real proof of what it is, like how valuable to me what I do for myself is, how much it's necessary, how much it's like breathing in air, and how vital it is for my own self. So.
And do you have siblings that you're close with?
Yeah, I have a sister, and I would say this experience with our folks has actually brought us much, much closer. But of course, like anything, there's just twists and turns every day, and that this film did its best to explore it in its own way and also in a funny way.
Absolutely. I have a brother, and I've watched my parents band together with their siblings when their parents' health is ailing. Is working with these three actresses and watching their sisterly bonds, their sibling bond in the film, did it at all make you rethink your relationship with your sister, or did anything shift there?
That's a great question. I don't know yet. I mean, really, because it's about to a world premiere in about, you know, 20, an hour from now, like I'll have a better sense of what that is
right.
Later. I could say working with these actors was just the thrill, like just to see how they figured out how to forge that connection with each other and when they disconnect in the film. So it was just... it was a great experience that I would love to think will somehow be a positive effect on, you know, my family life as well.
Thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on the film. I can't wait to see it.
Oh, cool. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
I am just so nosy. This is the thing. I always am interviewing these people about their art, but I love to know about their like emotional landscape. Like that's always sort of where my questions, like I'm listening back to this interview and I'm thinking like, Ruby, like you're asking him about his family relationships, which I mean, obviously is really tied into the art that he's making. But it's just so funny to me because that's always where what I'm really interested in is like a person's emotional world, where what they were feeling. But sometimes as an interviewer, you have to kind of navigate like, okay, what is this person comfortable sharing about their personal history or their personal feelings? But he was very generous and I felt like there was a comfort there, which was really nice. So as I said, I interviewed him. Then he was done going through the press line and I was like, all right, well, Ruby's going to shoot her shot. I was like, well, do you want to like, why don't kind of, can I have some more questions? I'd love to talk to you more. And he was like, okay. So I got to talk to him a second time and here's that interview.
Thanks so much. I just wanted to talk to you a little bit more about the process of watching your film Once It's Complete at the premiere and the vulnerability of that. What does it feel like?
That's the right word, vulnerable. So I just wish I had these actors here too, because it makes it a lot easier. But the film, like I said, is extremely personal. So it's what I have. It's the best I could do.
And this film is about, you know, sibling relationships, family relationships. I know your father is an artist as well.
And mother.
And oh, your mother as well. What is your relationship to them as an artist yourself?
They, from the very beginning, always made me think that art was as worthy occupation as anything. And I think that's pretty rare. Like, even dealing with being here, there's a lot of responsibilities to the family right now, and just trying to figure things out. But art always seems to come above everything. And so that's something they passed on to me.
And what, maybe this is a question you get all the time, but what do you love about being a director? Why be a director? Why put all this time in and drive yourself crazy?
There's many, many answers to that. And I think it's, it has a lot to do with the environment that I've found myself surrounded by. I've really had this kind of incredible career working with beautiful, special, inspiring people. And that's one of the things that I love the most.
So it's the collaboration of the art form?
Collaboration and inspiration. And also the films that, there's a bunch of films that have changed my life and that's, you just want to give back to them.
Absolutely. I heard you talking to another press person over there and she said to you, I can't wait to see this film. I'm a middle child. I'll feel like I'll identify with this or this character. And it got me thinking that the people who are going to see this film, almost every single person that sees this film is going to be able to relate to it and is going to be able to feel something for these characters.
That's the hope. I mean, we have no idea. We're about to find out in about 20, 30 minutes, but definitely it's that way for me.
Yeah, no, and that way for me too. You know, as soon as I started reading about it and started researching you, you know, I did start thinking about my own family dynamic and my relationship to my parents and my siblings. And so it really is kind of a self-reflective film. Do you feel that way about it?
I do.
Do you feel that way about all your films?
Yes, but right now this feels the closest to. A lot of times I'm making films about a period of time that I've gone through. And this time I've made a film about something that I'm experiencing right now.
And right now, you know, the red carpet is pretty bare because of the strikes that are happening, the rightful strikes that are happening. What's your relationship to the Hollywood of the art form, the star factor of the art form? You have Natasha Lyonne, Carrie Coon, and Elizabeth Olsen. These are huge stars, but there's the Hollywood of it, and then there's the art form of it. How do you navigate the two of those?
For me, they worked in tandem. I found myself by offering a counterbalance to what those other films offer these actors. It's given me a space so that they have, you know, they have a desire to do these one film and they may want to do something smaller or more independent minded as my own. So I feel like they really work with each other, that we share the crews. I see them very, very much intertwined, which is one of the reasons that I so much am like along everybody else, just want this thing settled and people given their, you know, treated humanely.
I'm a writer myself, and I find my relationship to my writing is either, oh my God, this is the best thing ever written, or I think I'm the worst person to ever put pen to paper. What's your relationship to your writing style and to your process?
I'm one of these people that I write random notes for a good year or so until I realize that there's a connection between the notes, and then things move very quickly if I wind up discovering that connection. Otherwise, you know, suppose you wind up writing for a long time and then realizing there's nothing there that's truthful or important to you.
Right. Is that painful to know you've been sort of working on something and putting shapes and shifts together and then it sort of doesn't come to fruition?
Painful is the wrong word. I think, you know, it's frustrating, but I really have been doing this a long enough time that you become comforted by that pain. Mm. It's not too big a deal anymore.
Okay, that's good to know. And thank you so much. You've been so generous with your time.
Thank you.
It was lovely meeting you.
Same.
Congratulations.
Okay, so when we listen back to this interview, I feel like I got some interesting things out of Azazel, but you can definitely hear that he is a little less interested in speaking with me, which is interesting. Like, I'm learning so much while I'm at TIFF. That was an interesting experience because the first time I talked to him, I felt, okay, he's like, although he's quite reserved and a little more soft-spoken, like, he's clearly really interested in talking about the art that he's made. But in the second go around, he was, you know, seemed a little annoyed. maybe that doesn't come through when listening, but I remember standing there with him thinking, okay, like, he has had enough of talking to press people about this. So that was interesting, right? That was a little schmoey. Like, I'm just learning, like, what is the best thing to do? I'm trying to shoot my shot. So that was sort of enlightening. It was very interesting, but I really enjoyed talking to him, and I am really excited to see his movie. I wasn't able to see the film. I wasn't able to get tickets to the premiere, but at TIFF. But I am really, really looking forward to seeing it, especially because I love Natasha Lyonne. I love her, so I can't wait to see his three daughters. All right, so we are going to plunge into an itty-bitty break right now, and then we will be back with more TIFF content. All right. Oh. Okay, we'll be right
the street the other day, and I couldn't help but see two young girls. Anyways, they were looking at me, but I pretended like I couldn't see them, because I know at home my girl's waiting for me. So her name is Mrs. Thump, and this one goes out to her. Thank you.
That was a great day. That was a sick.
All right. That was Miss Thump, Live in the Garage by Cherry and the Cherubs. Ugh, love Cherry and the Cherubs. They are my favorite Vancouver funk band. They're playing a show tonight. Where are they playing? I will tell you by the end of the episode where Cherry and the Cherubs is playing tonight. But before I do that, we are going to listen to some more TIFF interviews after that beautiful respite from Miss Thump. So the next few interviews that we're going to hear. So this is where I was talking about at the beginning of the episode, where we had these really short windows to interview people, especially for really high profile red carpets. So one of the more high profile red carpets that I went to was the Lil Nas X Live in Montero documentary film. So it premiered at TIFF and Lil Nas X was at the premiere and he walked the red carpet and he did walk past me and that was a big moment. Me and Callum were so tired that like it had been this really long day and the premiere was like pretty late. I mean, it was like not that late, but it felt late for us because we've been working all day. And as soon as he walked past us, like it was right near the end of the red carpet and we sort of packed up and we were so jazzed from having him walk past us that like we kept going for like another hour. We were riffing, we were bidding, like we had like another hour's worth of energy in us. We like went to go get ice cream because we were so excited but I think it was also like we were so excited by being at the red carpet and interviewing people was something that like really excited us, and like we were rapid fire trying to come up with questions while we were waiting in the press line talking to other press people. Like it's so exciting and you're so exhausted, and then as soon as you get in there and as soon as you start doing the work, you're just like totally reignited, and it's really, really exciting. So this interview was with the directors of the documentary. It is 1 minute and 55 seconds. What happened was we were near the end of the press line. Okay, we're not Variety, okay, we're not Vulture. But we were near the end of the press line and they said, okay, well, everyone, like these five outlets that are at the end of the press line, you guys are gonna scrug, which means like everyone, or scrum, it's not scrug, scrum, which means you ask one question and all these outlets get the answer from the people that you're talking to. So they said, okay, the two directors of the film, Carlos Lopez Estrada and Zach Manuel, they are going to come talk to you, but you guys are only going to have one question. So like you five outlets, you decide amongst the five of you, who's going to ask the question, and then you can all get the answer for your outlets. And they were like, okay, well, they were like, okay, why don't you guys ask the question? Because we had been like brainstorming questions for a really long time. And a couple of the outlets at the end weren't English speaking outlets. So they were like, oh, I feel like because you speak English, it might be easier for you to come up with a question in like 2 minutes, because it was like 2 minutes. So we were like, okay, we come up with a question and I get to ask it. I'm like, okay, amazing. I get to talk to these directors. They're like dressed so cool. They're both like these very sort of like artistic men that are like kind of ethereal. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to ask them this question and we're all going to get the answer. And I am always trying to extend my interviews as much as I can. If I can feel that the person I'm talking to is comfortable with it, then I'm going to try to extend it as much as possible and talk to them as much as possible. So I was like, okay, if I ask a question and they seem like they're into it, I'm just going to ask another one. So I'm pretty sure that you will hear a second question coming from me, because I am trying my darndest hardest to extend this interview. It ended up being 1 minute and 55 seconds. But here it is, without further ado, my interview with the directors of the Lil Nas X documentary called Lil Nas X, Long Live Montero. Carlos Lopez Estrada and Zach Manuel are the directors. Here it is.
Yeah.
So as you can hear, I'm like waiting.
Hi, Carlos and Zach. Hi.
Hi, congratulations so much on the film. We're so excited to see it. We're just wondering, how do you think that this film will progress music documentaries forward in the genre? And where do you feel that it stands in the canon of music documentary?
Nothing will ever be the same after this doc.
Everyone else got to do better.
What do you mean by that?
No, total joke. No, I mean, I think it's a really open look into an artist who like welcomed us, opened his doors, and just like was not afraid to introduce to his family, to let us into the behind the scenes process of his show, to let us in, like, see all the emotions that he's going through. So I hope that if nothing more, the honesty and the openness that he welcomed us with is something that really sticks around.
Yeah. At the end of the day, there'll never be another Lil Nas X. So this is the doc.
And there may be other docs of Nas, but none that will cover the emotions of going on the tour for the first time and singing his songs to his audience for the first time ever. He had done it in some awards shows, but never really had a full show. Our show that we covered, that we filmed in Atlanta, was the first time he's played in his hometown. So they're like things that we didn't even know that we were going to cover. All of a sudden, we were like, oh, wow, this is real special.
Sorry.
Thank you so much. Congratulations.
Did you get that?
I did.
So there I am asking the person beside me if they got it.
Yeah.
This is so funny. Okay, so that was a great answer, right? Like they had interesting things to say and they sounded like nice people, but I'm like, I pounced on it. I was so excited that I got to ask the question, that we got to talk to them, even if it was just 1 minute and 55 seconds. and as you can see, like, I tried to ask another question, but they were ushered away. But the film itself, again, it was a really late screening and we couldn't get tickets because it was one of the films that had a star, present because of the strike. So it was interesting to see how the red carpets played out because there weren't a lot of stars to go around. So Salma Hayek was at a premiere of a film that she produced. Same with Jessica Chastain. She was a producer on a film, so she was at that film. Finn Wolfhard was at a film that he directed. So there were these stars that were able to come to TIFF because they were coming on behalf of a different guild, not the Actors Guild or the Writers Guild. Very, very interesting to see the difference between the high profile star-studded red carpets and then the ones that had people that worked just as hard as the stars but weren't famous. Okay, so the next short interview is a 3-minute interview that I did with Alex Guinney. Okay, so I was so excited to go to this red carpet. Maybe this was the second red carpet that I did, but it was like one of the first ones really early in the morning. I am not a morning person. And it was the Paul Simon documentary, In Restless Dreams, the Paul Simon documentary. I love Paul Simon. He is like really important to me and my dad and my sort of my music education when I was first sort of developing my music taste. So it's called In Restless Dreams, The Music of Paul Simon. The director is Alex Guinney. And again, Paul Simon was gonna come to the premiere and then last minute he couldn't come, which I was so sad about because to stand in the same room as Paul Simon would have been literally insane. But I got to talk to Alex Guinney about the film that he directed, and that was really cool. Again, 3 minutes. I'm going to play the whole unedited version because I think it is interesting to listen to me waiting and the sort of crackling of the mic and then at the end when he's ushered away. So here is the full 3-minute interview with Alex Guinney.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Alex. I'm Ruby. Ruby Raven from CITR Discorder.
Oh, hey.
It's really nice to meet you.
Good to meet you.
I am so excited for this film. Paul Simon is really important to me. Something that me and my dad share. We always listen and sing along to his songs in the car.
Yeah.
So I'm so excited for this film. I'm not going to watch it without my dad. But to me and to the world, Paul Simon is this huge cultural icon. What makes his art so important to the culture?
I think because Paul is like a tuning fork for the culture. In other words, he's not pushing, he's pulling. And so often, you know, early in the film, somebody says, you have your finger on the pulse of culture. And Paul says, no, I don't. I said, my finger is there, and sometimes I'm lucky enough for the pulse to run over it. And I think, see, he has that sense of letting the culture flow through him, and it comes out in ways that are deeply personal, and that in some way I think affects all of us.
There's also something so poetic about that answer. Like, there's something lyrical about, I let the pulse run over me. How did your relationship to him change from not meeting him, not knowing him, only knowing him through his music, and then following him through the recording of his new album?
I think the fact that Paul was generous enough to allow us into these intimate moments of creation, you know, because he's reckoning with his hearing loss. It's harder for him with the loss of hearing in one ear to tune his voice properly to the instruments around him. So he's letting us see a lot of mistakes. And mistakes are precious because they teach you things, right? But I think that Paul allowing us that intimacy was great.
And as I mentioned earlier, Paul Simon was sort of my introduction into music and really important to me and my foundation for my love of music. Who did you have a Paul Simon in your childhood that sort of shaped your relationship with music? And how did that person lead you to Paul Simon and to the making of this documentary in terms of the link between your love of music?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm 69. So when I grew up, I was listening to Paul Simon.
Yeah.
Right. So he was an influence. I mean, a powerful one between Paul Simon and Dylan and Jimi Hendrix. Those people guided my youth.
What was that, the through line of the three of them for you?
I don't know. I can't tell you what the through line is. You just listen to the music and let it happen.
It's so lovely meeting you. Thank you so much. And congratulations on the film.
Thank you.
So that was my interview with Alex Guinea. I cannot even describe why I'm laughing, but that was an exciting moment to get to talk to him. I was like listening to Paul Simon that day because I was in a very Paul Simon mood, but it was really cool to get to talk to him, especially talking to, you heard the Azazel interview, that was a director with a film, the film that he wrote. And Alex is a director of documentaries. So it's interesting to hear each director talk about the film that they're making and what their relationship is to it, because they're kind of different mediums in a way. So, yeah. Well, I am going to wrap up the episode for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you're driving to lunch right now, because it's 10 minutes to noon. It's exactly 10 minutes to noon Pacific Standard Time. If you're driving to lunch, I hope that you're going to eat something really delicious. What I'm going to eat right now, I'll describe it to you. I'm going to go get a sandwich from the deli in the Nest at UBC. I'm going to get sourdough toasted with habanero cheese, okay? Then I'm going to get it with lettuce, alfalfa sprouts, pickles, green onions and tomatoes and cucumbers, salt and pepper, and turkey. Then, you know, put that all on the sandwich, cut it in half. It's warm, it's nutritious, it's got cheese on it, which just makes everything better. And so that's what I'm gonna go get, because that's been my hyperfixation food recently. I've just been like having that every day. I love a good sandwich. So I hope that you're gonna go eat a delicious sandwich, or maybe you're gonna have like, I don't know, some like chana masala, or like a veggie roll, like what are they called? Like the Vietnamese rolls. They're not spring rolls, but they're wrapped in like, do you know what I mean? They have like shrimp in them and you like dip them in peanut sauce. Oh, the name has escaped me, but I hope that you'll go eat that if you want that. All right, thank you so much for joining me today on Schmodio. Have a wonderful... Oh my God, wait. I am going to tell you where Cherry and the Cherubs is playing tonight before I log off. Let's see here. Cherry and the Cherubs is playing at... It is playing at... Where is it playing? It is playing at... This is... Oh! It's playing for BVP, Blank Vinyl Projects. Where is it, though? Oh, Biltmore! The Biltmore! Oh, my God. Wow. Yes, the Biltmore. I'm so glad you stuck around. You can hear it's playing at the... They are playing at the Biltmore Cabaret. Okay, now I'm going to head out. Thank you so much for listening. Bye!